morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer. Chris Carter still getting dressed. This is Nick Wright. Just sat down. We have a very busy Friday here this morning. It is still Friday nonetheless. That's a good thing. Here's what's on tap today. The Red Sox are going to the World Series. The Broncos destroyed the Cardinals last night. But here we're going to start with a Hollywood story. LeBron James finally making his Lakers debut in Portland last night. And it didn't take long for the King to act regal, opening the game with two signature dunks. There's one right there. Not to be outdone, Damian Lillard had a game-high 28 points. Oh, here's LeBron's other one. He finished with 26 points. He had 12 rebounds. He had 6 assists. It all wasn't enough, though. The Portland Trailblazers took this game 128-119. A lot still to come together for the Lakers. Here's LeBron talking about just that after the game.
We had some good, we had some bad, which is as expected for game one. Don't take patience from our team, from all of us, just to figure out one another, figure out what we're good at, figure out what we're not so good at and how we can, be better at it. So it was a good first test for us.
Overall, what did you think of the Lakers team defense? Defensively, how do you think you guys played?
We had some good and we had some bad moments, like I said before. So. We're going to watch film and get better at it.
What do you think the chemistry is now? How long does it take to get the same?
Not as fast as you guys think it's going to happen. it's not, I always kind of compare it, to like instant oatmeal. It's not that fast. It takes a while for the chemistry to get to where you can close your eyes and know exactly where your guys are, that's what we're going to work towards too, both not only defensively but offensively. It's going to be an everyday process for our ball club.
All right, we'll break down instant oatmeal in just a second, but I want to start with your initial impressions of LeBron James and his Lakers debut last night, CC.
I mean, even instant oatmeal, Jenna. Now, a person like yourself, you might be able to stomach it, but the rest of us, we needed some other ingredients. Butter, brown sugar, like we need other things. LeBron is going to need some help. As far as my impression, I've seen this a couple of times, and you have to be real, real careful. When the person's had a long and accomplished career as LeBron, trying to take one game as a statement game, it's really, really hard. Like, he's good at this. He's good at playing basketball. He let the game come to him nice and slow last night. You could see him getting a feel for the other players on the court. And it's something to get used to when you're playing with as many young players as he's playing with. So you see that he had 6 turnovers in the game. I like the way that he played. He wasn't as ball dominant as he's used to. And they played with good pace. LeBron, even at this age, can still play at a pace that he hadn't played at before. It's because of his teammates. It was what was best for them. But playing with young players, it's going to take time. And then most of these, or all of these situations, LeBron's lost game. When he left Cleveland, went to Miami, first game there, they lost. When he left Miami, went back to Cleveland, first game there, they lost. So I'm not surprised that they lost. I thought LeBron was very, very effective in what he was doing, though.
Everything about watching LeBron last night, to me, felt different except for the final stat line. Like, you look at the line, like, what did LeBron do? Oh, 26, 12, and 6. That sounds about right, but he wasn't bringing the ball up as nearly as often as mm-hmm. we're used to seeing him do. He wasn't the only guy coaching players on the court. Rajon Rondo was doing that. In fact, he was receiving some on-court coaching from Rajon Rondo, which I cannot remember the last time I saw that happen in a game. The pace, C mentioned. We are not used to seeing LeBron get out and run. We are used to seeing LeBron get the ball and then pound it near the top of the key and survey everything. What we also didn't see last night was something LeBron's been more effective at than any player in the league over the last few years, driving kick to corner threes, driving kick to open threes, because guys were not in the corner open and guys were not hitting threes. They missed their first 15 three-pointers of the game, which is why it was so really unlikely that they were down only 2 going into the fourth quarter. There's going to be some learning, some growing pains early on. We saw the struggles of playing with a young team, something LeBron hasn't dealt with in almost a full decade. And we saw, not to me, not surprisingly, the teammate LeBron was most comfortable with last night one of the oldest teammates, Rajon Rondo. Like, he and Ingram weren't quite on the same page. He and Kuzma weren't quite on the same page. Like, this is, it was a different version of LeBron than we've seen since before he became a champion.
Luke Walton tried a few different things out with LeBron last night. He tried him out with some of the veterans. He was playing with all veterans. Mm-hmm. He tried him out with some of the younger guys. He was playing with all the younger guys. How long is that process? What does that look like? Where did you think he was most comfortable and where this team could be the most successful?
Well, this is the thing. They're stuck with the younger players. So you know LeBron and the younger players. Lonzo Ball ultimately will be placed into the starting lineup. Rondo does have a significant role on this team, but they just got needs. All right, they got two big needs. One, who's going to be their backup center behind JaVale McGee? Last night, JaVale played 21 minutes, but they don't have a legitimate center. You cannot play Kyle Kuzma as your backup center. Like, it's a disservice to the young kid. He had a sensational rookie year after being, man, he one of the best, you know, stories of all the first-round picks there late in the first round. And they need three-point shooters. Like, you can't have, besides
Josh Hart.
Josh Hart, Pope, and LeBron, those are really only three-point shooters that they have. And that would probably be the least number of shooters LeBron has been on since his early years in Cleveland. So I think he will work out chemistry with the veterans, but also those younger players. It's not like, oh, man, let's try these guys out and we're going to make a trade. LeBron is there long-term,
right.
And we have to look at that with the continuity that he's playing. He's betting on the long game.
I know that going into the year, people, when it came to roster construction with the Lakers, people said, where's the shooting? Where's the shooting? Where's the shooting? And in one game sample, those concerns were validated. I think those concerns are going to be slightly overstated by what happened yesterday because, listen, LeBron, Ingram and Kuzma were 1 of 15 from 3. LeBron is a good three-point shooter. He might have to be the best three-point shooter on the team. But you mentioned Pope. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I'll probably all year long call him KCP just because it's easier. He was a non-factor yesterday. I understood why Lonzo was a non-factor. He's still coming back from the injury. Like, Lonzo is easing himself back into it. But KCP played 27 minutes, took 3 shots, and made no impact, no discernible impact whatsoever. He is there for his shooting. He is there for his shooting and to be a springy defender, even though any defensive metrics say he's not great at it. Theoretically, that's what he should be doing. If KCP is not a good starter for them, then they go to Josh Hart, who was the 30th pick in the 2017 draft, who finished the year strong, but you can't rely on that many young players. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope supposed to be one of their key rotation guys. I don't know where he was last night.
Let's talk about timing with chemistry. LeBron said it's like instant oatmeal. You seem to like a lot of brown sugar with your instant oatmeal. I don't know what kind of recipe works for this team, but LeBron said it. It's going to take a while. What are we looking at as far as when this team all figures out how to function together?
You probably say a couple weeks before the All-Star break. Like, we have to be real, real patient with them because this is a team that LeBron, not only from a talent standpoint, style standpoint, how they're going to play, their coach is the youngest coach in the NBA in Luke Walton. So it's up to them and that staff to figure out, as a style, how can we continue to try to play at that style? And I just expect them to add a couple other pieces, especially a backup center, because Kuzma's not going to be able to do that. We just have to give them time. We're expecting them to win, I said yesterday, 48 to 50 games. All right? It's an 82-game schedule. So before the All-Star break, a couple weeks, I think that you'll see that continuity begin to play out.
And there were some positives. They were excellent points in the paint yesterday. I thought they were better defensively than 128 points allowed would indicate if you didn't watch the game because the pace they were going and because in the fourth quarter the Blazers caught fire.
Yeah, their perimeter defense at the beginnings was not great. In the first half was not real good.
And the Blazers were just missing some open shots early. Nick Stauskas had the best game of his career, which helped the Blazers keep the lead early when Lillard and most notably CJ weren't playing well until the fourth quarter. But here's the thing. Like, they didn't hit any threes. Stauskas had the game of his life. This is a two-point game midway through the fourth quarter before the Blazers pulled away. Like, and I didn't think LeBron played that well. You mentioned he lost every debut game. He's also had at least 6 turnovers in every debut game. Like, it was LeBron, you always talk about Tiger Woods, first tee, jitters. Like, LeBron, when he changes teams, that first game.
Survey.
Yeah, a little bit of surveying, new teammates, new landscape. Now, it doesn't get any easier for the Lakers.
No.
They get Houston on Saturday. Now, that one's in Los Angeles. But such is life in the Western Conference.
Well, for a guy that didn't win in his debut, he still put up 26-12-6, so I'm sure he'll take that as well. Coming up, let's talk some football. Thursday night football. Did the Broncos figure out their formula for success last night against the Cardinals? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back. We'll get to the Broncos destroying the Cardinals in a bit. But first, LeBron, first points as a Laker, came on two thunderous dunks. First dunk off a steal and the other in transition, doing LeBron things.
The transition one, it felt like it was an all-star game because the Lakers had just given Damian Lillard a pathway to the rim, and then the Blazers just gave LeBron a pathway to the rim.
Yeah, he got a nice little pick there. There was a corner, a shooter in the corner, so the help defender couldn't help out on him because he's going to give up the easy three. Nice little pick play. Good little read by LeBron.
All right, more from this game. Al-Farouq Aminu driving to the basket puts JaVale McGee on a poster.
You know what I like about JaVale McGee? And I felt this way everywhere he's been. He's going to show up on a lot of posters. You know why? Because he's contesting at the rim.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's doing his job as a 7-foot-1 guy.
And I've told you a long time ago, Nick, if you're in the NBA, you're going to get dunked on. Like, you're supposed to get dunked on. The only people don't care about the NBA players don't care that much about the posters.
Like, watch him dribble.
Thursday night football, Broncos, Cardinals, Von Miller went around the lineman like he wasn't there, stripped, recovered.
That is, the NFL is going to do an instructional video. This is how you strip sack without actually touching the quarterback.
Yep,
this is what we want in what you call the pillow league, see?
This is how you dip your shoulder.
Oh.
That's what they should make a training tape on. That's how you dip your shoulder. And what will not be a training tape is how to play right tackle. Don't get your shoulders turned like that, son. You got to keep your shoulders parallel with the line of scrimmage.
All right, finally, Emmanuel Sanders takes a toss, finds a wide-open Cortland Sutton in the end zone. Nice diving catch.
Yeah, we can't depend on the case because we got a case of the cases. Let's want to let one of the wide receivers throw it. Create some offense, taking advantage of all those turnovers they had last night. Good play call by the Broncos. Emmanuel Sanders with a perfect pass.
Emmanuel Sanders, I feel like, is one of the more underrated receivers in the league. Hadn't had great quarterback play the last 5 years, yet, or last 4 years, I should say, yet continued to be very productive and now showing off his arm.
Yeah, the wide receivers in Denver have not been very productive since Peyton Manning left. So,
but Emmanuel's been the most
productive.
Some
people would like to say they was overrated when Peyton was there, and now they've come back down to earth.
Sticking with Thursday night football, Von Miller promised a good old-fashioned butt-whooping earlier in the week, and then he went out and delivered a good old-fashioned butt-whooping. The Denver defense picking off Josh Rosen three times, bringing two of them back in the house to the house in the first quarter. Also had six sacks, recovered two fumbles. Great night for the Denver defense. Rosen left in the fourth with a toe injury. He will be evaluated. The Case Keenums win big, 45-10. Here's Von Miller after the game.
Ain't no backing down now. And I think, you know, we have a great football team. We got great leadership. We got a great GM, great owner, great coaches. And we got great players. And I just thought what we was missing is just the confidence part of it.
It's a team game, and I know my brothers would have my back. I obviously didn't play up to my standard or even close to it. But, I mean, that's why you play another one next week.
He seems to be very up in the air about, you know, the difference between the pro game and the college game. It seems he was far more serious about the college game. The pro game, he said earlier in the week. Remember, he's like, well, I'm taking this a little more freely. We got another one next week. So I think I'm maybe pitting myself to a corner here, but those were my original thoughts when I saw this post-game press conference. We'll get to that in a second. Last night's game, see, was it more about the Broncos' great defense or what you saw or didn't see from the Cardinals on offense?
Well, I think it's about both. Von Miller did make a statement. Very, very rare you see a player of his ability to take over a press conference and say what he's going to try to do during the game. And he put the message out there as far as the organization. We're a lot better. I expect a lot better, and it starts with me. I like that leadership that he provided, and he showed that. Like, he showed from the beginning of the game, they were playing at a different gear than Arizona. Now, Arizona, with a rookie quarterback, this is one of the worst offenses that we've seen. In the first seven games, they're averaging about 220 yards offense. Since the new millennium, since 2000, man, we've only had a couple teams now that have played as bad as them. The Cleveland Browns, I think, in 02. The Texans early there, 2000.
With David Carr.
Yeah, so this is a bad offense. Right now, in the easiest time to be able to throw the football, they're averaging 220 yards of offense. That's going to be a problem. And, Nick, I told you, before the draft,
All these quarterbacks, no matter where they go, a lot of their success will be determined on how much do they get hit in their rookie year. Because there's a couple of these kids, they grew up in a couple of towns that end with beach on them. And I'm just, I've been watching this game a long time. And you can get the football knocked out of you. So I'm concerned with that offense that's struggling, not only with the quarterback, that bad offensive line. They've been bad in that offensive line for a number of years. David Johnson, somehow they've made him disappear.
And if right after they paid him.
And if that quarterback continues to get hit, you're going to have problems in Arizona. You can't develop a quarterback with him getting up off of his backside.
Which is why, in order to try to get something out of this season, in order to try to get something out of David Johnson, and in order to try to make sure Josh Rosen does not have the football knocked out of him, I think they need to strongly consider a coordinator change in Arizona. And Mike McCoy is the coordinator there. Mike McCoy got famous for being the coordinator on Peyton Manning's Broncos teams. Now, every stop since then, he has chipped away at his own fame. He gets a head coaching job out of that, and we see the worst seasons from Phillip Rivers and the Chargers since Phillip Rivers has been there. He's a coordinator last year, gets fired during the season last year. Now he goes to Denver, and Coach Mangini mentioned this to me. Firing season opened when Tampa Bay moved on from their coordinator. Now it's open season. Stink said yesterday that if the Broncos if they lost yesterday, Vance Joseph's job would be on the line. Obviously, Arizona's not going to change their head coach. He's a brand new head coach. But when you are getting this little production from an offense that has David Johnson, that still has Larry Fitzgerald even in year 15, that has a receiver that I think is really interesting in Christian Kirk.
Yes.
I like Ricky Seals-Jones at tight end. Even if you think Josh Rosen, not you, but the generic you, even if you think Josh Rosen stinks, there's no reason the offense should be this uncreative, this basic in 2018. And so, I mean, you've got to do something there because your future investment is that quarterback. There are no great offensive linemen to be had. It's not like they're going to find a new right tackle right now. So I don't love coming on TV and calling for people's jobs. In fact, I don't know that I've done it more than maybe once or twice the whole time we've been on the show. But if Arizona decides in this long week to make a change at offensive coordinator, I don't know how anyone could blame them.
What about on the other side? Was this somewhat of a statement game from Denver, who really needed to win after losing four straight, or could you really not judge that because of who their opponent was?
Man, Denver has the capabilities. Now, are they going to be able to play defense the way they did a number of years ago? No, they are a talented team, but they're still challenged from an offensive standpoint. They got their running game going last night, but if you're going to win the turnover margin the way they did last night, the chance you win the NFL games are going to be very, very high. But I like the way they went about it, all right? You cannot rely on Case to be able to throw the ball 40 times. You have to be able to run the ball. Their offense played on a short field. They end up getting some big plays from their passing game. Those are all things that they weren't able to do. But in Denver, everything starts with Von Miller and that defense. So I like their whole attitude going to Arizona after being embarrassed the last couple weeks.
And that is why it's, when we talked about Denver yesterday, it's so frustrating from just an NFL fan perspective that they have not been able to even come close to getting the quarterback position right. Because Von Miller is a superstar in this league. Von Miller is on a Hall of Fame track. Chris Harris Jr., the corner who had a pick six start the game yesterday, is having one of the best careers any undrafted player has ever had. Like, I mean, he's multiple-time All-Pro, I think a three-time Pro Bowler. When he was there with Aqib, when Aqib Talib was there, I feel like coaches would have told you Chris Harris was the better player. Aqib Talib got more of the headlines, maybe the flashier player, but Chris Harris, they were teammates at Kansas, Harris and Talib. Talib went first-round pick, Harris went undrafted. Harris has been great. You've got real pieces on this defense, and you saw it yesterday. And I want to give Von Miller a ton of credit because, to circle back to what we started with, he called a shot, man.
Yeah,
and if they lost, if they played poorly, if Josh Rosen carved them up, that's a tough press conference he's going to have to give after the game. He put it out there, and he delivered. He was the best player on the field from the opening snap last night.
And I just want to finish up by asking one more question about Josh Rosen. Is that offense hurting Josh Rosen, or is Josh Rosen hurting the offense?
It's hard to evaluate quarterbacks when they're under duress. So Josh Rosen should be a star in the NFL, like he should be. but you have to be able to support him. I believe they do have the talent with Fitzgerald, with Kirk, and some of the other young wide receivers they do have there. But you're not going to be able to evaluate him, and he's not going to be able to get his potential getting hit. Now, they better start learning how to protect him. They better come up with a game plan, because he will not survive. You don't want to start, you don't want to come out of this year with him wondering, oh man, is he durable? Because those are going to be the next questions. He talked about how UCLA was a little easier. He wasn't as nervous. Yeah. Oh, we getting ready to find out.
Well, and Jenna, you made that point off the top, and I didn't react because I was trying to kind of fully understand what you were saying there with it. And he said yesterday, and you were right, we heard it yesterday, that at UCLA he was maybe a little more cautious because one loss in college football can eliminate you from national championship discussion. Two losses can eliminate you from a conference title discussion. In the NFL, that's not the case. But what he is going to learn in the NFL is multiple games with multiple turnovers mm-hmm. can eliminate you from how your teammates are looking at you if they give you the best chance to win, whether or not they still have Sam Bradford there. Those are the types of things he's got to worry about at this point.
And also, just be careful as a fan. The last 2 weeks, very, very tough. In Minnesota and then now with Denver. Collectively, those defenses are top defenses in the NFL. He's still a rookie. It's still yet. We need to see a larger Mangini, a larger sample size sure. before we start giving up on Josh Rosen. I believe he's their quarterback of the future.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, you'll never believe what Jerry Jones had to say about his quarterback. Lots of chatter in Dallas. Next on First Things First. The MLB postseason continues tonight with Game 6 of the NLCS. Manny Machado and the Dodgers look to silence the Milwaukee faithful as they take on Christian Yelich and the Brewers. That's at Miller Park. Coverage begins tonight at 7:30 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
Cannot wait. I hope Manny Machado kicks a couple people in this game. What?
It's an unpopular take.
You tell me all the time I'm too honest. I'm going to continue to be too honest. I like Manny Machado adding a little spice to baseball. Get your foot off the bag. He didn't have to leave his foot on the bag. I hope the Dodgers win also because I think they have the best chance to beat the Red Sox. I don't need Boston winning any more championships. They got like 11 in this last 20 years.
It was almost too honest.
I'm just letting you know what we're looking for. We're looking for a Manny Machado kick somebody and the Dodgers to win. Your take?
That's my part.
Yeah, yeah. Every decision in your life, CC, has led you to where?
2 days away from Sunday. 2 days away from praying for me. But in case you want to speed it up, God is available.
Time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. David Price got his first career postseason win as a starter last night. Boston took down the Astros. We just talked about it. 4-1 in the game, 4-1 in the series. They'll either take on the Dodgers or the Brewers in the World Series. Nick, how impressive have the Red Sox been this whole season?
How about in the postseason, 5-0 on the road in the playoffs? You split your first two at home against the Yankees. You then win the next two in the Bronx. First two at home against the Red Sox, or against the Astros. You win all three in Houston, win the series in five. Spectacular performance by them.
Jenna, you were concerned about the Red Sox. How do they follow up that unbelievable regular season? Like you mentioned, 5-0 on the road. That's how you can continue that historic pace. They're getting now the pitching and the bats that they got during the regular season. It's going to be an exciting series.
Shout out to David Price, his first career postseason win as a starter.
Oh, yeah.
He had lost 10 straight.
Yeah, he was desperate.
All right, moving on to basketball now. LeBron James dropped in 26 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists in his Lakers debut. But L.A. got off to a rough start, missing their first 15 three-pointers and finishing just 7 of 30 from deep. Nick, what'd you make of the Lakers' shooting woes?
Listen, we didn't think they'd be a great shooting team. We didn't even know if they'd be a good shooting team, and we still don't. But they won't be as bad as they were last night.
No.
Kuzma's not going to go 1 of 7. Ingram and LeBron are not going to combine to go 0 for 8 from 3 as they did last night. But that's why they lost the game last night. Couldn't hit an outside shot at all for the first three quarters of the game.
And we're going to have other nights just like this. It's going to be one of the reasons why people say, oh, how many games are they going to win? 40, 50. If they can hit their three-pointers, they can be one of the top four seeds. If they don't, they're going to be fighting in that West. This is life in the Western Conference. Tough matchups night after night.
All right, to the East. Bulls taking on the 76ers. Ben Simmons looked good with a 13-13-11 triple-double, while Joel Embiid added 30 points and 12 rebounds. The Sixers win big, 127-108. Nick, this is the Philly team you thought you were going to see out of the gate.
And it's the Bulls team I know we're going to see all year long, one of the worst teams in basketball. Philly, in the first quarter last night, I was concerned. They gave up 41 points in the first quarter to a bad Bulls team. They gave up 35 points in the next two quarters combined. And we saw most teams are not going to have an answer for your pick preseason for MVP, Joel Embiid. He dominated this basketball game. Simmons was really good. Embiid was the best player on the court.
Yeah, it's good to see that they have a style. Joel Embiid, he's not going to lie on the three-point line. He's going to be a post-up player, phenomenal two-way player, amazing on the defensive glass and rejecting shots. But to me, the best thing was the coach, Brett Brown, playing Markelle Fultz, playing those 32 minutes, not giving up on him. You could see with the fan support, how very rare is it to see a standing ovation for a starting player to hit a three-pointer. That's what we saw last night. That's what we must continue to watch in Philadelphia.
All right, on to the NFL now. The 4-2 Bengals traveling into Arrowhead to take on the 5-1 Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City putting up nearly 36 points per game, while the Bengals defense ranked 29th in the NFL, giving up 409 yards per game. CeCe, how can the Bengals try and slow down this Chiefs high-powered offense?
Let's go back to New England. New England faced them recently. It was a great football game Sunday night. The things we talked about there, either a short passing game or, man, we need to definitely control the time of possession. We need to be able to run the football. We need to keep Patrick Mahomes and that explosive offense off the field. That should be the ongoing theme every week. Now, the problem here is, how do you do it? How do you continue to call up enough third downs? And even if I do that, I can still lose because that's where New England was. If they don't score as quick as Kansas City scored there late in the fourth quarter, we don't know if Tom Brady is able to bring New England back if this game goes into overtime. So it's hard to do when you're placed. It's the pressure that you face. It's very, very rare that when you're in an offensive meeting in Cincinnati this week, they're talking about the other offense in Kansas City. And that's what you have to face. It's going to be a beautiful night. It's a Sunday night game. The weather's going to be beautiful there during the day, high in the 60s. So a beautiful night to be able to play football. My local weatherman here will kick him back into action later on this season. So that's the pressure, though. And it's very, very rare that you're so worried as an offense, which the Bengals and Andy Dalton will be, about Patrick Mahomes, because if you put your defense out there 32, 34 minutes, they're going to give up 35, 40 points.
Well, and listen, I do not think the Bengals can slow down the Chiefs' offense. The only hope they have defensively is the Chiefs have some offensive line injuries that they suffered in the game against New England. Geno Atkins is one of the best interior defensive linemen in football and has been for the better part of the last half decade. He would have to have one of his best games of the year if they're going to have any shot at slowing down the Chiefs' offense. What they're going to have to do, I think, is try to match scores. They're going to have to try to do what Pittsburgh almost was able to do, what New England was able to do, which is say, okay, we know you're getting your 35. We're going to try to get our 38. So that means A.J. Green. That means Tyler Boyd, who's actually had quietly a good year. And Andy Dalton has had an outstanding season last week notwithstanding. Like, this is going to be a game in good conditions at Arrowhead that the Bengals, I think, have to go into it saying, similar to what New England did, fourth and short, past the 50, it's four down territory. That we are not settling for three, because we saw the Chiefs. People need to remember in last week's game, how many points did the Chiefs have at halftime? 9. They finished with 40. So even if the Chiefs stall out early, turn the ball over, settle for field goals, they will find a way to get their points. Cincinnati needs to score early.
Kansas City has been amazing playing on the road in tough condition. In Pittsburgh, we saw what they did to them. In Denver against that defense, tough. And then the toughest place there in New England. What do they do at home? If they're going to have home field advantage, you guys must send a message. Every time you play at home, they got a great fan base. Let's see the message they can do. They should play their best football on their home track.
That is one of the reasons people should be, I think, encouraged or at least believe the Chiefs are pacing, as you said, that you thought they'd go 14-2. First six games of the year, four of them have been on the road. None of them have been against easy opponents. It's been the Chargers is the one you didn't mention. Now, that's not an intimidating environment, but that's a good team. Mm-hmm. Denver, Pittsburgh, New England, their home games have been easier, San Francisco and Jacksonville. This will be, I believe, their toughest opponent at home yet. They've dominated those home games. See, if I think they'll continue that this Sunday night.
All right, let's move on to the Cowboys, where Dak Prescott is coming off his best game of the season this weekend. It's a crucial divisional matchup against Washington. Owner Jerry Jones knows exactly who the Cowboys quarterback of the future is, saying, quote, he's long-term. Anything we need to see and need to know, I see with him. He's not a bus driver. He's a weapon. And as mobility diminishes, then you'll pick up where he is with that great decision-making, with the mind he's got. I take offense with any serious projected criticism about his accuracy. He can get the ball within the circumference of where receivers can catch it. They need to help. I had to go back and look to see exactly who he was referring to here, and it was indeed Dak Prescott and not Tony Romo or Troy Aikman. I checked that three times just to make sure. What's your reaction?
When he says the circumference of where they can catch the ball, I'm sorry to interrupt. He means the catch radius. That's the way most people would say it. He can get it to receivers. Catch radius, I think, is what Jerry's talking about there.
But in his head, it looked like a circle.
A circumference. So there is no, I get it. Your catch radius all around. Go ahead, see.
Well, this is the thing. I'll go to the back end of the comment. And that's about after the circumference, that was the wide receivers need to help. Well, Jerry picked the wide receivers. I mean, he went to the Beyonce concert with his best option as a wide receiver, decided to send him on his way and not bring him back to the Cowboys where they practice. So, Jerry, you're picking the players. You're responsible for who Dak's playing with. And I understand every person. And, man, it took me a while to realize this. Every person has their own reality. Nick Wright's got his own reality. Jenna Wolf's got her own reality. And Jerry Jones definitely has his own reality. Now, he would love for it to end that way. But right now, he's doing some serious projections. And I thought that they were still in the dating process. I didn't know they was getting married.
Right.
That's got to be news. So, to me... Forget about the wide receivers. Dallas should always have good wide receivers. It's a great place to be and to play. They don't. The quarterback, the owner's saying, I'm ready to get committed, married long-term, and man, Dak don't know who he is. Like, Dak don't know what kind of quarterback he's going to be in 3 or 4 years. I haven't seen the decision-making. I haven't seen the overall arm strength that I could trust Dak. With the number of quarterbacks that are passing the ball successfully, that I'm getting ready to settle. Now, as a guy who, you know, I haven't been single much of my life, but
here we go.
I just don't know if that, if he's marriable right now.
Right. You'd be settling. You'd be settling and you don't have to.
Yes.
Go ahead. Hold on.
No, I'm going to pass it right now.
No, he's about to do something.
No, because I just.
It's too early to get yourself in trouble.
Yeah, Jerry, you're the Cowboys.
Okay.
Does Jerry know what team he owns?
Exactly right.
I mean, exactly if this is America's team, do you think Dak Prescott, of all the skills that we see, all right, and the college quarterbacks that we'll see come out the next 2 years, do you think that you're going to bet your life savings on Dak Prescott? No, let's not do that, Jerry. You're just a little strong right now.
Who did Jerry and Dez went to concert to see who? See?
The Queen Bee.
Beyonce.
Yes.
Beyonce wasn't settling. Beyonce had a bunch of guys come after her, as her rise to stardom. You know what she waited for? Oh, the king of hip-hop, Jay-Z. The Cowboys are the Beyonce of the National Football League. They are the most prominent. They are the most talked about.
Oh, man. So now you're saying Beyonce is all about hype, man.
No. I'm not saying that.
Okay,
I would never say that about
no
the greatest
problem.
Living
okay.
American, Beyonce Carter, Nose Carter. However,
what I am saying
is, like, you don't settle on Dak. And listen, Dak, you joke
but
about...
But you don't have to make up your mind today.
Exactly right. You joke about my roster of clients in my burgeoning agency. Dak's not one of them. But if he were, you know, if I'm his agent and I hear those comments, you know what I'm doing next? I'm calling up the Dallas Cowboys and saying, well, it sounds like we should be working on our contract extension. Sounds like the owner is saying, my guy is the long-term option. So this $700,000 he's making, we can go ahead and rip that up for next year. And go ahead and get him locked in. And that is a dangerous game to play. Because the Cowboys, their path to being a team that is as good for how often they're talked about is to have to go along with this offensive line and Zeke, a young stud, cheap quarterback.
Yes, cheap.
Cheap. Their path is, they already have built in what the Eagles and the Chiefs, and not the receivers part of the Chiefs, but the weapons, the offensive line, the running back. Now they just, you plug in that first round rookie quarterback. You plug in that rookie contract quarterback. They've got one plugged in right now, and their offense is bottom third, bottom quarter of the league. Like, you don't marry that guy, not before you have to.
Explain something to me. If there is an owner in the NFL that doesn't take advice, crap, for lack of a better term, criticism from anyone, it's Jerry Jones. He does what he wants to do, the way he wants to do it. He brings in coaches that he can manage. He makes all the personnel decisions at the end of the day. Why would he ever want to settle? Why does he care about, what loyalty does he have right now to Dak Prescott when he had no loyalty, as we talked about, to Dak?
One of the biggest problems, Jenna, is when you do a radio show every week, people got questions, and then you have comments, and then now you have to live up to these comments. This is not a decision that Jerry is in the best interest of the Dallas Cowboys. Even if he feels it is, he needs to be able to delay giving Dak a contract as soon as possible. He can't give Dak and Zeke a contract. Now, do you think Zeke's agent going to allow Dak to go in there and get 20-something million, where Zeke is the most important part as far as their offense?
So, well, and I would go, I don't think it's just the radio show. I think if we're going to continue this tortured analogy one step further, you got to remember, Jerry left his wife for Dak. Tony Romo, who he loved and adored. He said, no, I'm moving on to the younger, better, sexier option.
But at the time, it was the right decision. He had a fantastic first year.
Yeah, he did have a fantastic first year. But now, if Dak wasn't the right choice, then we revisit, did you push Tony Romo out the door too early? So you've got the person, you got to be right on him. Like, Jerry, I don't think it's just they did the radio interview. I think it's that he committed himself to Dak, whether he was saying it publicly or not. The moment he let Tony Romo know, you better go into broadcasting. You better find another team, because this guy we found out in Mississippi State's the next quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys.
I used to tell guys all the time, hey, man, be careful what you think about that player. It's like, man, that guy can't play. If the ownership thinks he can play, you better start changing your mind to think he can play, because the guy is going to be here. So regardless of what we think, what we say, it lets you know that Dak Prescott's going to be the quarterback in Dallas for a long time.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, we'll talk about two guys who definitely can play. Can Khalil Mack and the Bears defense slow down Tom Brady and the Patriots? Next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're joined by former Super Bowl champ Chris Canty. Chris?
Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning, bro.
Proudly wearing your Virginia colors.
Yeah, big win over Miami last week. See if the guys can double up and follow that up with another big win.
Have you been wearing that suit every day since?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Actually, Jenna.
I wouldn't do that.
He was saving it for us.
No, no good reason to do that.
Well, just if you want to keep them winning.
No good reason to do that. Yeah. Touche, sir.
Juju.
Let's keep this rolling.
Patriots taking on the Bears on Sunday. Tom Brady versus the guy looking to make Tom Brady look bad, Khalil Mack. The Pats are riding a 3-game win streak, but have yet to win on the road this season. And at last check, this game was on the road. One thing to note, Mack has missed the last two practices with an ankle injury, but is expected to play in this one. So, Candy, how does the Patriots offense match up with this Bears defense on Sunday?
Well, I think the Patriots offense, as constituted, matches up against any defense well. When you look at the weapons that Tom Brady now has, Julian Edelman and Josh Gordon, to go along with Rob Gronkowski and all the other guys that he got in the backfield with Sony Michel and James White. I mean, this is a special offense, and that's why I took a little bit off for this offense to start to click, because you were missing some of those elements earlier in the season with the suspension, and then, you know, they didn't have anybody outside the numbers as a receiving threat other than Gronkowski. So it took a while for this offense to kind of pick up the pace. But what you've seen, what they've done in the last 3 weeks, being able to score 38 points in consecutive weeks, going up against the Miami Dolphins and the Indianapolis Colts, and then following that up with a 43-point performance last Sunday night against the Chiefs. I mean, this is a special offense. Now, they haven't seen anything like this defense this season other than the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I think this is another one of those tests going up against a really talented group. But I feel confident in Tom Brady and those guys that they have in those Patriot uniforms going into Soldier Field.
Yeah, I think this is where we start to see, even though they've had the productivity and typically how they like to do things, they want to kill you by 1,000 paper cuts.
You know, either throwing the ball to the flat, Sony Michel running the ball is a different version of this New England team that we haven't seen consistently the last couple years. They like moving the ball through the air. But I just believe now the explosive plays are going to start to come back. Josh Gordon's been there long enough. You could see in last week's game that was the most snaps that he had played combined. You could see he played over 60 snaps in the game. So to me, they're telling me he's more comfortable in the offense. They're more comfortable having him on the field. And going against this secondary, I look for Josh and Gronk to have big games. So I'm looking for the explosion in the passing game that them for them to rely on that. Now, you say, well, you're going to hold the football? Yeah, I believe they're going to have time. The ankle injury to Khalil Mack, he suffered it early in that Miami game. Mm-hmm. After that ankle injury, he has not practiced this week. He was not effective in that game. Now, he's a little undersized. He relies a lot on his speed and power. Now, you have an ankle injury. The field in Soldier Field is never a great surface, so I believe it's more of a mudding, thick surface.
I understand what I'm talking about.
Kentucky bluegrass, not that Bermuda.
It's a slow track.
Yes, it's a very, very slow track there in Green Bay. So
in Chicago.
Yeah, I know you don't travel around the league. Just giving a league-wide grass report, all right? In that part of the country doesn't grow quite the same way as it does more down south. So I just believe it will affect him. I believe he will be neutralized. And the rookie linebacker, watch him take advantage of his overall aggressiveness and him being a rookie.
Listen, if the Patriots don't turn the ball over, they should be able to win this game rather handily. That has been the key to the Bears' defense. They had an early bye, so they've only played 5 games instead of the 6 most teams have played. They have forced 14 turnovers in those 5 games. So they're forcing almost 3 turnovers a game. 9 forced fumbles. So I know Khalil Mack's been a big part of that. He had a forced fumble the first 4 games of the year. But that means they've got 5 forced fumbles from players other than Khalil Mack. They've forced 10 interceptions of opposing quarterbacks. And quietly, Brady is turning the ball over more this year than he typically does. He's thrown 6 interceptions. We saw the strip sack that happened in the Kansas City game. So you actually can win the turnover battle against New England. That's something I think they absolutely have to do. Mitch Trubisky was one of the few bright spots from the game this past weekend against Miami. Yep. He actually played well. It's one of the reasons why it was so odd to see Matt Nagy get so conservative in overtime when they had a chance to win that game. But this is a critical game for Chicago. Chicago knows they should be 4-1. New England, on the other hand, knows right now they can keep the pressure on Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And so for both of these teams coming into this game, recognizing what a loss does to their long-term hopes as far as getting a bye or winning their division.
But this is definitely a statement game for the Chicago Bears. This is a good opponent that if they can beat an opponent like this, they could say something. But how much of that is going to fall on Matt Nagy to get a little more aggressive, a little more creative than he has been, which have turned into losses the last couple weeks for them?
Well, there's going to be some pressure on Matt Nagy to be creative because you know that Bill Belichick is going to take away some of the things that Mitch Trubisky is most comfortable with. He's going to force him to make the throws that are a little tougher. And so I look for that chess match to play out on the offensive side of the ball when the Bears have got the ball. But I'm looking at Vic Fangio and that defense and how much he can neutralize that passing attack of the New England Patriots. Now, we've seen the balance that they have being able to run the ball and throw the ball, but this team is a pass-oriented offense right now, as we've seen through the first 6 games of the season. So I'm looking to see if they can find a way to pressure Tom Brady without Khalil Mack being 100%. Because you mentioned it, CeCe. He had that ankle injury in the first half of the Miami Dolphins game. But since that point, the Miami Dolphins hung 24 on that Chicago Bears defense. And had it not been for a strip fumble by Akeem Hicks at the goal line, they would have lost that game in regulation. So, I mean, I'm looking at this and saying that Bears defense has got to find a way to keep this game close because there's no way that Mitch Trubisky can get into a shootout like Pat Mahomes did with Tom Brady a week ago.
Well, I'm putting the responsibility on the head coach. I'm not going to blame Fangio on the defense. I'm not going to blame him. I'm blaming on Matt Nagy and that head coach. And the reason why, he's got a good quarterback who has a big-time arm. Now, is he going to develop into a quarterback, though? We know he's got a big arm, and he's a thrower, just like Josh Allen. But at some point, is he going to be an NFL quarterback? That responsibility is on Nagy. And also, Nagy had the blueprint. And that was what Andy Reid, his mentor, did last week. Now, is he going to trust his quarterback the way Andy Reid trusted his quarterback? Because Nagy runs the same system of what they're running in Kansas City.
All right, I'm glad you brought up Andy Reid, and then I want to ask you a question. In the last 5 years, four times a team has scored 40 points on the Patriots. Three time, Andy Reid coached Chiefs. One time, Doug Peterson coached Eagles in the Super Bowl. Who's Doug Peterson part of whose coaching tree?
Andy Reid.
Mm-hmm. So Matt Nagy part of that tree. But you mentioned something that we've talked about a lot off the air that I want you to kind of elaborate on for the audience. The difference between being a guy that can throw the ball really well and a quarterback. Like that, because that you said it there, but you glossed over it. Explain what you're talking about there, because we know there are guys that can throw the ball really well that never turned into quarterbacks. We don't know which direction Trubisky's going to go. So explain what you're talking
about. Yes, and at some point, you have to take that skill level and to be able to appropriate it to the game. Mm-hmm. And you want their skill level that you can start to actually see it. As you can start to see with Baker Mayfield, he is not just a thrower of the football. He's a quarterback, and it goes into how you're going to be a leader, how you're going to throw certain passes, and you can see it. Like ultimately, it's like the combine. Do you take that athlete and put him into the system in the NFL and they can ultimately play? Whatever position they are they able to transfer that skill? And that's what we want to see with these quarterbacks. Ultimately, I want a quarterback. I don't want a guy who can just throw the football. I want a guy who's a born leader, a guy who can take a hit, a guy who can adjust his throws, and a guy who can play in multiple systems. That's what I mean when I'm talking about quarterbacking compared to just being a thrower of the football.
Nate Peterman. Stick around.
He's neither.
Chris,
none of the
coming up, did the Broncos
no matter what
save
you guys
season.
Say about me, my Lord Jesus Christ, he's going to be
with a dominant
with
win over
me,
the Cardinals last night.
He will not leave me nor forsake me.
How can I? Okay, first things first. Back here with Chris Kenny, we are going viral. Earlier in the week, Bill Belichick was asked if Khalil Mack compares to Lawrence Taylor. We talked about it on the show yesterday. Nick called LT possibly the greatest football player ever. Seems like LT agrees. He replied to our post saying, quote, I played to leave it all on the field. Hashtag lights out football.
Not the greatest still image of me, eyes closed, mouth open, looking like Draymond Green. But
look like the
point got across,
right? The point
right?
got across.
There you go.
If people didn't watch, I didn't say LT's the greatest football player ever. I think that football's the hardest sport to actually do that.
Yeah. Just,
but if we were to make a list and someone had him at the top of the list, you can't say they're wrong.
So he would be on the Mount Rushmore of football players.
We can make some Mount Rushmores if you'd like.
Listen, this year when they introduced Ray Lewis into the Hall of Fame, they were getting ready to introduce Ray. And I was standing next to LT. I spent a lot of time with LT. He's a lot of fun. I was like, LT, he told me in the back, he better than you. He says, he ain't tell you that. He don't even believe that. So, LT, he's one of the greatest ever. Without question.
No doubt about it.
Brady, Rice, Lawrence Taylor. There's one Mount Rushmore spot open.
Reggie White.
No spots open, actually. Jim Brown, Brady, Rice, Lawrence Taylor. There's your Mount Rushmore.
Sorry. Got to consider Reggie White. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. Got to consider Reggie
rest
White.
Rest in peace, Reggie White. Deion Sanders. I got love for all y'all. But there it is.
Jim Brown last week, they might have took him off the round. Jim Brown, man, God bless you, Jim. Jim called me.
Jim played himself off it.
All right, back to last night's game. Von Miller promised a good one, a good old fashioned.
I'm out here just trying to serve. You with the wrong guy.
He promised a good old fashioned butt whooping canty, and then he went out and delivered a good old fashioned butt whooping canty. The Denver defense picking off Josh Rosen three times, bringing two of those back for points in the first quarter. Also had six sacks, recovered two fumbles. Maybe Von Miller can predict the future. Josh Rosen left in the fourth with a toe injury. He'll be evaluated. Broncos win big 45-10. Here is the fortune teller himself, Von Miller.
Ain't no backing down now. And I think, you know, we have a great football team. We got great leadership. We got a great GM, great owner, great coaches. And we got great players. And I just thought what we was missing is just the confidence part of it.
It's a team game, and I know my brothers would have my back. I obviously didn't play up to my standard or even close to it. But, I mean, that's why you play another one next week.
Kenny, this was one of those games where Von Miller had enough, where he's like, I don't – take all your previews, throw them – I'm getting out there. I will win this game. It is going to be an all – you ever put yourself in a position like that? You ever have an opponent where just cast all the numbers and stats aside, it was just going to be you were going to go out there and grind it out and win it?
No, I did that one time, and I – even though it worked out for us, I kind of regret doing it. So I called my shot in the Super Bowl. I said, Everybody in New York, get ready for a really good game against the Patriots in Super Bowl 46, yep. And get ready for the parade on Tuesday. Now, it just so happened that it worked out,
right,
but yeah. I wouldn't do it again.
Right.
But
all I'm saying, you get one shot.
But when you listen to what Von Miller said about that, after having those four losses, he was talking about trying to instill a level of confidence in his teammates, and he put it on him. And that's the right place for it to be, because all the pressure for this Denver Broncos team in order to try to get a win has to fall on this defense. That's clearly the most talented aspect
and
of their team.
And you saw
it on display last night. And so that defense got things off to a fast start. The deflection by Derek Wolfe at the line of scrimmage on the second play led to the Todd Davis pick six. They had another pick six with Chris Harris in that first quarter. So, I mean, when you have two touchdowns by your defense in the first quarter of play, that's how you change the complexion of the game, and that was the difference. If you look at those four losses, not a whole lot of offensive touchdowns in the first half of those four losses. So if somebody was going to get the party started for the Broncos, it had to be the defense. And, of course, Von Miller, he was up for the challenge.
Yeah. Nick, there are a couple benefits. I know you don't think there's a whole bunch. Jenna thinks there's a lot more. Benefits of working with me. One of the benefits is, guy says something like that. I happen to be covering this league long enough that I was one of the people to interview Chris Canty. Now, it was after he had already made that prediction. So Canty not necessarily telling us the whole truth, because even after he made that prediction about the parade, you know, I asked him, you know, man, what's the story behind the story? Did you look at the film, feel as if you guys have great matchups in this game? He said, yeah, we feel like we have good matchups. We know the only way you can beat Tom Brady is by going through the center and the guard of the New England Patriots. I said, yeah, but is there anything else? He said, yeah, there's a little something else, Chris. I was like, what is it? He said, man, we played them that last game of the regular season. Man, they disrespected me. And I said, what? He was like, yeah, this is about respect. I'm going to go out there and create some respect. So Von Miller, man, a lot of times this is about respect.
Mm-hmm.
That defense, as well as they've played, led them to two Super Bowl appearances, led them to Peyton Manning getting his second Super Bowl. Man, they've been disrespected, and he was going out there to be able to earn some of that respect back. And sometimes it's not about scheme. It's about I'm getting ready to force my will, and that's what we see sometime in this league with great players. I thought it was great leadership by Von, because it's hard not to follow his lead. And you could see instantly, I'm playing left end, I'm playing right end, they're double teaming me. I don't care. I'm not going to make excuses. And that's what great players do. That's what great leaders do. They don't sit around and point at everyone else. Oh, it's that guy's fault. It's that guy's fault. Yeah, it's a team game, but it starts with a lot of great individual efforts. And that's what I saw last night from Von Miller.
On the other side, you got to look at rookie quarterback Josh Rosen. His offense didn't help him out at all
last
night. Well,
I was very high on Josh Rosen going into the draft. After the draft, I said, I think multiple times, that I think he's going to have the best career of any of these guys. Now, Baker has, I think, taken the lead in that regard, but I'm still high on Josh Rosen. But last night on my radio show, I talked to a guy named Greg McElroy, who was an excellent college football player, won a couple championships. Mm-hmm. And he talked about the game he played, which I believe was the last or the second last NFL game he ever played for the New York Jets against the San Diego Chargers. That's who they were at the time. When he not only was sacked 11 times, but he was hit or knocked to the ground 34 times. And he said to me last night on the show, man, during that game, I questioned if I was good at football anymore, if I liked football anymore. He said, I'd done this my whole life, and it immediately made me think of you, because you said one of these young quarterbacks might get the football knocked out of him.
Mm.
And he was verbalizing, that's what happened to him. Like, and now, I mean, all credit to him, he's gone on a very successful broadcasting career. But that day, the football got knocked out of him. That didn't happen to Rosen last night. But it's on the board, it could. If they don't make some significant either schematic changes, mm-hmm. personnel changes at the offensive line,
changes.
Find a way to use David Johnson as the weapon that he is, this isn't the biggest guy. And even in today's NFL, you can still get the football knocked out of you. And I was thinking of you when I was watching the game and when I was thinking about Greg McElroy's comments.
Yeah, here's the thing. When you're dealing with a young quarterback, you got to make sure that you protect him so he can develop well. Now, you thought that that's what the Cardinals would do when they signed David Johnson to that contract extension before the season started. We thought, okay, at some point we'll see Josh Rosen, but it'll be a heavy dose of David Johnson and put him in situations where he wouldn't be asked to do too much. But last night, because they got down in a hurry, they were forced to throw the ball. And when you are one-dimensional offense going up against that kind of pass rush with Shaq Barrett and Von Miller and Brad Chubb, like, you're going to be in a tough spot. And that's exactly where Rosen found himself. And the fact that Andre Smith and DJ Humphries couldn't lay a hand on those edge guys, that didn't help the matter. And so I think that is what dictated the complexion of last night's game. And Steve Wilks and Mike McCoy, they didn't have any answers for it.
Yeah, Mike McCoy is definitely put in question here. Nick has talked about him, the lack of creativity. This is the thing that pressure does to young quarterbacks. It makes them speed up the play clock in their head. Now, they don't know what pro football is about, so it's already faster than anything they've ever played. Now, the rush makes their brain move faster. So, also, it makes them speed up the anticipation. So, you can't anticipate a wide receiver because the wide receiver is not moving at the same clock you are. The last thing it makes them do, too, is it makes them speed up their drops. So, the drops with the wide receiver's routes are timed up. So, a three-step drop is timed up with the route outside. A five-step is drop. Now, if I speed up his drop, the wide receiver's not
speeding
up.
Everything's all the same.
Everything.
It is
like
hard
dancing with Jenna.
It is hard to impossible. But this is the thing, though. At least you start with good looking. So at least you got a chance. Just allow me to be the lead. Okay? That's the way you have to be able to do that. So it's hard on younger quarterbacks. And then they start to make up their mind. Is this business cut out for me? And that's a real question that young quarterback, Marcus Mariota. The reason why Greg McElroy is coming up was because he got sacked 11 times.
Yep.
And Greg McElroy is the answer to that trivia question. Was the last time
someone got sacked 11 times.
Right. So, Arizona, man, do something for your quarterback. Support your quarterback. And if you have to let go of one of them coaches in the meantime, then it's in the best interest of the organization.
Chris Kenny, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Really appreciate it. Coming up, 27 dance moves you haven't seen by me. That's next on First Things First.
No.
Sunday, it is a great slate of NFL action highlighted by Cam Newton and the Panthers taking on Carson Wentz and the Eagles, or Kirk Cousins and the Vikings battling the Jets. All on Fox or the Fox Sports app. Check local listings for the game in your area.
That Panthers-Eagles game, that is a huge game. I'm excited to see if
we
Panthers can bounce back.
We'll get to just that game
Lions
in a
Dolphins,
minute.
I'm calling that game. Well,
no, you're not.
So am I.
Yeah, from my house.
But first, LeBron, first points as a Laker, came on two thunderous dunks. First off a steal, the other in transition.
Yeah, this one right here in transition, man, it sure looked a little like all-star game defense. The Lakers had just given up a dunk to Damian Lillard, and then the Blazers gave one right back to LeBron. Those first 4 points, great first quarter for LeBron, not as great final three quarters.
It was good to see him in that iconic Lakers uniform. That's the most iconic uniform he's worn. I mean, the Cavs and the
Heat. Oh, no question.
Heat.
It's the most iconic uniform in the NBA.
Same game. Al-Farouq Aminu driving to the basket.
Yeah, not the best comment ever.
Puts JaVale on a poster.
You mean the Lakers have more iconic uniforms than the Cavs and the Miami Heat? Put that on the gram, America. JaVale McGee, listen, he going to get dunked on, but he's contesting.
Oh, yeah.
He played a good game yesterday. Good defensive game and good offensive game.
Finally, Emmanuel Sanders takes a toss, finds a wide-open Cortland Sutton in the end zone. Nice diving catch by Sutton.
Jenna, you see that throw right there?
I did.
Unfortunately, though,
Who didn't make it? Who didn't make the throw?
The quarterback. Your guy, Case.
Yeah. Unfortunately, what C was about to say is, unfortunately, that's the best throw any Broncos made all year.
Listen,
and it was made by Emmanuel Sanders.
Nick Wright texted me last week and said, it's over. It's time to get off.
I told her she got to pick a new guy.
Pick someone else.
And you know who she texted me? I'm going to go with
Quitty.
Osweiler.
he goes,
Quitty,
nope, wrong
Quitty
guy.
Jenna, like that guy did you in high school.
Mike DiBianco?
Yeah, Mike DiBianco.
DiBianco.
We can't be using this. This isn't that guy's fault.
Revenge.
And by the way, he saw some
Find
change
him
on
somewhere.
The horizon.
Find him somewhere and do this to him.
Getting woke.
That bad guy broke up with a lesbian.
I mean,
God forbid.
Not there.
That ain't his fault.
Not then.
Jesus, people.
20 years earlier.
The kids.
We've gone off the rails. Right, Deontay. Two NFC playoff teams from last year squaring off on Sunday. Panthers and Eagles. All eyes on Cam Newton and Carson Wentz. Despite a 3-3 start, the defending Super Bowl champs, the Eagles, they're coming off a big win. And they have seemingly found their identity, at least according to their head coach. This while the Panthers are just 3-2, coming off a loss to Washington. CeCe, what are you looking for in this matchup?
Oh, I think it was a great matchup. Better than the matchup you had during high school and everything.
With DiBianco.
Yeah.
There you go. Say it again.
Carolina's defense, are they going to get back to the Carolina we've seen with Riverboat Ron and since Cam Newton has been there? A dominant defense. You can't run. and Carson Wentz and this offense, where do they evolve to? Carson's gotten better every game. It's what we should expect with a quarterback coming off of that knee surgery. So who can grow their offense in Carson Wentz and this Carolina defense? Because I'm concerned about the Carolina defense. I'm concerned about their inconsistent play. I'm concerned that, man, there's a couple teams that did what you can never do on Carolina, and that's run the ball on them and run it between the tackles. If the Eagles are able to find some type of running game, what I believe that's part of the lack of overall consistent productivity. They don't have a consistent runner of the football, and I believe it's time to give someone that identity. Who's going to be your number one rusher for the Philadelphia Eagles to be able to relieve some of that burden from Carson Wentz? This is the type of game that you try to find that identity. I believe this is a good matchup. This is a good football game.
Listen, both these defenses are giving up about the same yards per game, almost identical. What's the difference in the production? Because the Eagles have a top five defense overall and as far as points allowed, and the Panthers are barely in the top 10. The Eagles have the number one red zone defense. The Panthers have the number 31 red zone defense.
That's hard to believe.
It's hard to believe, and it doesn't match up with the personnel the Panthers have. And it doesn't match up to their history, which is sometimes they would give up big plays, but they would strengthen in the red zone. That's been Philadelphia's MO this year. They give them a ton of big plays, but they've been excellent in the red zone. It wasn't just week one against Atlanta. It's been their theme throughout the year, even as they've struggled on the back end of that defense. I think one of the reasons Philadelphia is so good in the red zone is hard to exploit bad cornerback play as the field gets shorter and easier to exploit your advantage on the defensive front as the field gets shorter. For Carolina, my big concern about Carolina this year was, are they going to be able to keep Cam upright? Amazingly, if you remove designed runs, Cam's been one of the least hit quarterbacks in football this year. So that offensive line, as banged up as it is, has done a good job protecting Cam. This is an enormous game for the Panthers. I understand Philadelphia is coming off a win. We felt like Philadelphia 10 days ago, or 8 days ago, really showed who they were against the Giants. Panthers were feeling great at 3-1, then a bye. Then a loss where they were. They didn't come out ready to play until the third quarter against Washington. If all of a sudden they fall to 3-3, you feel very different about if the Panthers are going to be able to return to the playoffs. So for both of these teams, this is one of the biggest games of the weekend.
You know, Doug Peterson came out, and I mentioned this earlier, and said that I think we're finally figuring out who we are as a team, what we're good at. I would say both of these teams have a bit of an early season identity crisis, because I think what we thought we were going to see with Cam Newton, maybe we're not exactly seeing, and we thought we were going to see with the Eagles, we weren't seeing. Who has more to figure out as far as figuring out who they are as a team?
Well, right now, I just believe that the Philadelphia offense and their inability to be able to run the ball. Reason why we give them credit is, man, they got good big people, got great defensive line, got great offensive line, but they're getting good pass protection, giving Carson Wentz ability for the passing game to flourish, but without being able to run the ball. So the effect that it doesn't have on the defense when you do try to run an RPO, because you are not a – and I just think that they really miss LeGarrette Blount. Like, they miss that thud and that hammer that they used to have last year. So even though you have LeGarrette Blount and you run RPOs with the other running backs, even though they're not big as him, the overall effect it has on the defense, because they were known more as a running team last year, and I believe it opened up a lot of things in the passing game. They still miss Mike Wallace as far as a deep threat down the field. Alshon Jeffries, you can see him and Carson starting to get that connection coming back last week. I believe it's a big game for both teams, but what do the Eagles do if they're not able to build on the momentum after smashing the Giants last week? So I can make a case for both teams.
Right. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Whoever loses this game, we're going to have real questions about who they actually are.
Yes.
If Philadelphia loses, we're going to look back on Thursday night a week ago and say, man, that was about the Giants being awful. That was about the Giants potentially going to another top three pick. If Carolina loses this game, we're going to say, oh, okay. So it's back to the inconsistency. What is Carolina great at? I thought going into the year they would have a dominant rush defense. Remember, the first game of the year they played Dallas. And I said, there's the one game all year that Dallas can't just say, I'm going to run Zeke 30 times.
Right.
And by the way, they were really good rush defense in that game. Since then, they've been below league average. Like, the Panthers are a confusing team to me this year, because 3-2 isn't shocking. But 3-2 when Cam hadn't really played a bad game yet. 3-2 when Christian McCaffrey is the guy that they thought he was going to be. 3-2 when the offensive line has played better than I thought. They should be better than what they've been, given all those things. I never thought the issue with the Panthers would be an average defense, but that's where they're at right now. A lot of that's the red zone troubles. We'll see if they shore that up this weekend.
For years, the Panthers have gone the way Cam Newton goes in a game, and it just hasn't been the case this year. He's actually been pretty consistent.
No, I mean, in their two losses, he's got five touchdowns, two picks, a 98 rating. Like, he hasn't been the reason they've lost football games.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up, can LeBron James carry a young Lakers team? That's next. First things first. Back here, first things first, we are going viral. Tua Tagovailoa has taken college football by storm. He has his Alabama team ranked number one in the country and is starting to draw attention from other star quarterbacks. Check out this text exchange he posted on Instagram. Tua, huge fan of you, bro. Keep balling. Let's link up. Always here for you. I know we got similar people in our worlds and everything else, too. Whatever I can do to help. Russell Wilson. How much does it mean hearing from a guy like Russell Wilson?
Oh, man, that's amazing. That's great stuff. That's how me and OBJ started, just like that. Now, Tua, hope you keep everything the way you are. Don't change, dye your hair and everything. But that's the way a lot of people, it connects the world. That's why the world is so much closer. There's so many more relationships. That's awesome. That's what someone as Russell Wilson's character and ability should be doing. And they are a perfect match on and off the field as far as their personalities.
But how about on the field stylistically? I know Tua is left-handed, so you got to reverse everything. But does his play remind you of Russell Wilson at all? Because his build reminds me of Russell Wilson a little bit.
A little bit. Russell's got a really special body as far as their height being challenged, them having an overtop throwing motion, even though, of course, Tua's throwing it from the left. Yeah. No, there's a great carryover from a style. They both have a perfect throwing motion straight over the top.
What up, Jenna?
Go ahead.
That's good.
Go ahead. Give it to me.
No, you got me thinking because I mentioned my ex-boyfriend's name, and I just wondered if I'm going to get in trouble for having mentioned that. Was it wrong of me?
Now I'm thinking out loud. I told you 6 months ago not to say this poor guy's last name on the air.
You got nervous.
C hadn't been able to get Alshon Jeffrey's name right for 2 years, but he got your ex-boyfriend's name right 11 times last segment.
Alshon Jeffrey, man, stop sweating it. Hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to have a list of five people you got dumped in high school. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm making five stories to start your morning.
I'll
get a sponsor for that one.
That was funny.
This is sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel.
David Price got his first career postseason win as a starter last night. Boston took down the Astros 4-1 in the game and 4-1 in the series. Now they'll either take on the Dodgers or the Brewers in the World Series. All right, Nick, how impressive has this Red Sox been?
Man, listen, they won 108 games, and I was talking about that all year, but I also said I thought the Astros were the best team in baseball. All the advanced analytics said that. Run differential said that. And then they went into Houston and swept them in Houston. The Red Sox are 5-0 on the road this postseason, 2-0 in the Bronx, 3-0 in Houston. What a remarkable run up to the World Series.
Jenna, you and I were concerned with how are they going to follow up that historic regular season we saw with that road record playing that well. It speaks for, man, getting this team to the World Series. You like to see one of the best, who's had one of the best regular season, get to that championship platform. That's where they're going to be, the Red Sox. They deserve it. It's going to be an exciting World Series.
Happy for David Price. Such regular season success.
Yes.
Boston stuck with him when a lot of their fans didn't want him to. He was great last night.
All right, Bulls take it on the 76ers. Ben Simmons looked impressive with a 13-13-11 triple-double, while Joel Embiid added 30 points and 12 rebounds. Sixers win 127-108. Now, good. How did this Philly team look last night?
Philly looked good. They needed to. The Bulls are going to be one of the worst teams in basketball this year, and Philly didn't come out ready to play defensively at all. They allowed 41 points in the first quarter. They responded by allowing 35 points in the next two quarters combined. But see, your MVP pick, Joel Embiid, most teams are going to look like this against him. They did not have an answer for Joel Embiid on the low post. He dominated that game.
You can see him to continue to develop. The thing that we like most is he's not on a minutes restriction. Yep. So you're talking about talent, can shoot the three, can run the court, is a monster on the defensive end. So this team is growing. I'm worried about their bench, though, Nick. They're not very, very deep this year.
They actually let Markel Fultz play in the second half,
yeah,
which I know
goodness.
You're happy
Yeah,
about.
That was one of the bright spots in the game.
Actually,
play the kid.
People were cheering every time he got the ball.
They
were standing up and
they
cheering every time they wanted to see what he could do. All right, moving on to what could have been Paul George said he would have joined the Lakers if the Pacers didn't trade him to the Thunder last year. PG went on to sign a four-year, $137 million extension, and Lakers got some guy named LeBron. So, Nick, what'd you make of Paul George's comments?
It just confirms what I think smart people knew, which was that Paul George didn't stay in Oklahoma City because LeBron went to L.A. and he didn't want to play with LeBron. He stayed in Oklahoma City because he fell in love with Oklahoma City.
Yes.
And he loved playing with Russell Westbrook. This
More
wasn't about who not to play with. It's about who he wanted to stay with. Had he never had the experience of playing with Russell Westbrook, he was going to go sign with the Lakers and LeBron.
Yeah, I believe that we can flip those around, too. You didn't mean them in that order as far as the organization and then Russell.
Sure.
Man, Russell, that was a huge impact. He fell in love with playing with Russ, thought that the extended time in training camp, spending more time on and off the court, that bond would only get better, thinking they could compete for a championship. So, yes, that was the reason compared to not going home. So that was a huge decision.
And real quick,
PG,
you know who heard that and got at least a little optimistic?
Toronto.
Folks in Toronto. About Kawhi Leonard, that maybe they can turn him the way OKC and Russ
The fans
turned.
In Toronto were working on opening night.
Absolutely right.
All right, ending with some college football. Number 6, Michigan, taking on number 24, Michigan State. When asked about the rivalry, Jim Harbaugh said, quote, I understand it thoroughly. Harbaugh is 1-2 in his career against the Spartans. CC, how do you see this game shaping up on Saturday on Fox?
Michigan's looking good. Michigan is this is where Harbaugh expected his team to be. In this year of him taking over, they had the beginning season loss at Notre Dame, which has turned out to be one of the top teams in college football. But this is a team that we can't be fooled thinking you're going to watch Michigan and watch this explosive offense. If you watch Michigan, the best part of Michigan is their defense.
No
it's a top
question.
Five defense in the country. Get after the passer. Got good linebackers. Got a good secondary. Can turn the football over to give Patterson and that offense an opportunity to mature. And you could see in the last couple games, the offense is catching up with that defense. Jim Harbaugh should be proud. Now, they should be able to get this win. If he does not get to 2-2 in this Michigan State rivalry, man, there is going to be a huge, huge problem. So all the momentum that they had created for Harbaugh can be lost immediately in this huge rivalry game this weekend.
Listen, Michigan's played one bad quarter of defense. One bad quarter, not game, quarter of defense all year. It was the first quarter of the season against Notre Dame. They let Notre Dame score 14 points. Since then, they have been the best defense in college football. You said it. The offense is just now starting to catch up a little bit. But the defense, what they did to Alex Hornibrook, who I think was 9-1 in his last 10 starts leading into that Michigan game, that and Wisconsin last week was dominant. Now, it will all be erased if they lose as touchdown favorites on the road against Michigan State this weekend. They're 1-2 against Michigan State. They should be 2-1. They blew one of those games on a bad special teams play, but nobody cares about that. People care about what's his record against Ohio State, see?
Had 1-1.
0-3. Against Michigan State, their secondary rival, 1-2. Now, I can say, and I have said, man, if not for a spot, they have a win against Ohio State. If not for a bad snap on a punt, they have 2 wins against Michigan State. But the reality is, in the record books, 1-5 against their 2 rivals. If they win this weekend, which they should, they could be playing, they should be playing Ohio State with the path to the college football playoff on the line in the final game of the regular season, especially since the other division in the Big Ten does not look like it's going to put out a real contender in the Big Ten championship game. But in order for that Ohio State game to mean everything it should, where it could be 3-2 in the country, they got to win this weekend.
And Danny Cannell came out here and said yesterday he thought Michigan was one of a handful of teams that actually can compete with Alabama. At
yeah, they're
point,
good enough so. Defensively to be able to slow down Tua in that offense.
All right, moving on. We finally got that long-awaited Laker day. Debut for LeBron James, the team in Portland last night. It didn't take long for the Kang to do his thing, opening the game with 2 signature dunks. LeBron finished with 26 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists. Not to be outdone, Damian Lillard scored a game-high 28 points. Blazers win 128-119. Here is LeBron on what he brings to a young Lakers team.
You control what you can control, man. What I can control is how I lead these guys and how I prepare every day. I come in with a championship mindset and an excellent preaching and practicing excellence every single day. So, and I believe that will wear off.
All right, Nick, which of LeBron's teammates right now, and he's working with a group of young up-and-coming guys, which of his young teammates needs to step up most for this in this season for it to be considered a success?
I think LeBron's favorite teammate's going to be Rondo. But I think the most important teammate to him and the one that has to play the best is Brandon Ingram. Brandon Ingram was bad in the first half yesterday. He played much better in the second half. But Brandon Ingram's the only other guy on this team that can be a 20-plus point-a-game guy. And you got to remind me, the last team to compete at the level the Lakers want to that only had one guy scoring in 20 a game. There isn't one. Like, every team these days that's a real contender has a couple go-to scorers. We know what LeBron's going to bring to the table. And I know what the other guys can bring to the table is complementary pieces. But as far as guys you can run the offense through when LeBron's out of the game, guys that you can throw the ball to at the nail and let him go to work, that is Brandon Ingram. He's a guy that has to take the type of leap he made from year one to year two, which was substantial. He has to make that type of leap year two to year three.
Nick makes a great point as far as Brandon Ingram being that most important. Nick makes also a good point as far as his favorite teammate probably is going to be Rondo. I'm just going to tell you, might not be his favorite teammate. I believe the most important is Lonzo Ball. And the reason why is because not only because of his skill set, a lot of it has to do with the organization and what Magic Johnson said. Because if he can be the difference maker at the point guard, it becomes even more attractive who they're going to get in free agency beyond this season. Because in the West, let's not forget who you're competing against. Chris Paul is aging, but man, Steph Curry, he's aging. But these guys still got 2 to 4 years in their prime still left. You're going to have to deal with those point guards. We saw the two guards that Portland's throwing at us. So in the West, you got to have a guard. I just believe as far as the Lakers developing, if they want to play at pace, if he develops his jump shot, I just believe the totality of it, Lonzo Ball continues, and he's going to be able to move the meter with LeBron. Because if you have a superstar point guard who has a lot of the attributes of LeBron, I just believe that to be significant. Is it more important than his relationship with Rondo? I can't say that. Is it more important than Ingram's develop? I can't say that. I believe all of them are very, very important as the Lakers continue to try to put a basketball court that potentially can represent a championship in the next couple of years.
Do you think Lonzo cares whether it's a veteran or if it's a young guy, whoever it is that steps up? Right now, does he...
LeBron cares?
Yes. I'm sorry. Do you think he just feels like he can trust the veterans a little bit more?
Listen, LeBron's never played with a guy like Rajon Rondo. And that's the reason I mentioned him. He's never played with a guy who can meet him at eye level on not just basketball IQ, because D-Wade could do that, but as far as the first inclination being to pass, to get teammates involved. There were two really good moments of leadership last night, one by Rondo coaching up LeBron, and then one when LeBron was mic'd up, and they made a big deal of it on the broadcast, where he went over and he said, guys, if you fall down, stay down. Wait for one of your brothers to come pick you up, to try to remind these guys we have to all be pulling in the same direction.
Yeah, and we're trying to create a culture.
Yes.
All right? That we're going to be there for you, and that's on and off the court. LeBron James is, your brothers are going to be here for you. So it's important that all of them develop their own little relationship. And that's the one thing I can say about LeBron. Knowing teammates that played with him his first stint in Cleveland, knowing teammates that played with him being Ray Allen, Shane Battier, Dwayne Wade, and talking with these guys, they have never had a teammate who did the type of team building and things that LeBron James has done. And this is coming from a roster of Jetty Osman, who could be the last guy on the end of the roster compared to a guy who was a franchise player in Dwayne Wade. So that's something that LeBron has done and has done and has excelled in doing.
To circle back to the importance of Ingram, when you look at this Lakers team, I like their guard depth. Even in the Western Conference, when you have Rondo and Ball as your two point guards, and Josh Hart, who played well yesterday, and by the way, he finished the season last year, 5 straight 20-plus point games. He had 20 last night. And then Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who was bad last night, but is a good rotational, he's a good fourth guard on a team. Their guard depth is fine. Rondo, Ball, Hart, KCP. Their front court depth is non-existent. You have your starters, Ingram, LeBron, JaVale, and then you have Kuzma. And then who else do you trust? Beasley didn't play any meaningful minutes last night. Lance is there to be an instigator and to once every 2 weeks catch fire. Like, they need, like, I know they said, oh, we're gonna be careful on LeBron's minutes. No, you're not. He played 38 last night. He's going to play 38 every night. They need Ingram to be able to do the same thing. They need Ingram to be able to, and they need to be able to run the offense through him in those 10 to 12 minutes a night that LeBron's on the bench. Because no matter who Lonzo is, he's not a guy you're going to run the offense through. He's going to be running the offense himself. Same with Rajon Rondo. He's going to be running the offense himself through somebody else to go score. That's got to be Brandon Ingram.
All right, we've got to take a break. Coming up, Jerry Jones signs off on who the quarterback of the future is for the Cowboys. That is next on First Things First.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple. Easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
Back here on First Things First, we are joined by Pro Bowl defensive end, the new host of Speak for Yourself.
Look who's here.
Look at this.
What's up, man?
Congratulations. Took a subway from L.A., brother. How you doing, man?
I told you we was doing good things over here.
I had to follow you, CC. You always know.
Yeah, no problem. I left some breadcrumbs for you.
Oh, yes, you did. A whole loaf.
An accomplished author and everything.
Oh, appreciate it.
Recently
that.
Released book, Never Shut Up. But yeah, we're in this business. That's a good topic, good heading right there.
There it is.
Congratulations, man.
Congrats, man.
Welcome to the family.
Joining us,
oh, man, love it. I watch you guys in the morning sometimes.
When my
son is not sleeping so well, I'm up and then I catch you guys.
Welcome to the lifestyle. All right, Marcel's talking about the Cowboys. Dak Prescott's coming off his best game of the season this week, and it's a crucial divisional matchup against Washington. Owner Jerry Jones knows exactly who the Cowboys quarterback of the future is, saying, quote, he's long-term. Anything we need to see and need to know, I see with him. He's not a bus driver. He's a weapon. And as mobility diminishes, then you'll pick up where he is with that great decision-making and with that mind he's got. I take offense with any serious projected criticism about his accuracy. He can get the ball within the circumference of where receivers can catch it, also known as catch radius. They need to help. Bam, Jerry Jones, you take that. Yeah. I'll tell you about football when you need to know it. Hey, what was your reaction, Marcel, to what Jerry Jones had to say?
Oh, man, he's a masterful businessman, and he's always in negotiations. And this is the time where he's negotiating with Dak Prescott when actually Dak is at his lowest point in terms of leverage. All the criticism on Dak. He's the reason why this offense can't go out there and play well. You know what Jerry is saying? This is when I pick him up. Because this is how I'm going to ensure, one, if I want this guy going forward, hometown discount has already been planted in his brain. But more importantly, to his direct comments, I hate to be this guy, former Cowboy I was. Cup of tea. Not even a cup of coffee, just a cup of tea.
They did cash
all 17 weeks. But I will say this about Dak Prescott. In this inflated NFL, how they're protecting the quarterback, protecting the wide receivers, once in your career, give me 4 touchdowns in a game. You know, this year, Dak Prescott, I love you, big dog, but please go out there.
Can you throw 275?
throw for 275. Complete 20 passes at least once in a game this year. And you look at him, and this is what's a damning stat. In 38 games, he's had three games over 300. Applause. And then he's had 16 under 200. Like, rushing yardage he's putting up as a passer. And everyone got caught up in last week against Jacksonville. Fool's goal. 38 minutes time of possession.
Everything is soft.
Running game. If you're going to make him Cam Newton light, tell me that. And as a defender, I'm going to smile a little more. I'm going to say, oh, yeah, that's not Cam Newton out there. So I hate to be hypercritical of what he is as a player, but right now I don't see him as the franchise quarterback.
But that's why, because you say he's a Jerry Jones, great businessman, that's why I don't understand these comments. Because if I hear these comments and I'm Dak's agent, I'm calling now about an extension that Dak certainly doesn't deserve right now, but might never deserve. Like, what we know about Dak Prescott through those stats you just laid out, 38 games of his NFL career so far, he is not a guy that once you have to pay like a franchise quarterback and you are not able to have all the weapons around him that these young quarterbacks are getting in Kansas City, in Los Angeles, in Philadelphia, that is going to elevate the play of his teammates. Like, so I don't understand why Jerry Jones would come out and say these things unless it's one of those lies you got to keep telling to yourself. Because Jerry Jones loved Tony Romo. Jerry Jones felt like, man, we discovered Tony Romo, and to a degree they did. Like, it's not like Tony Romo was some hot prospect out of Eastern Illinois.
Right.
And he told Tony Romo, you got to work somewhere else because we found the younger, hotter, better version of you. And now I think there's a lot of people thinking that's a mistake they made. That Tony Romo in today's NFL, where you can't hit the quarterback, where we're seeing all these guys go into their late 30s, still productive, what would the Cowboys be if Tony Romo was still there? What would Dez Bryant have been if Tony Romo was still there? Would Jason Witten have left if Tony Romo was still there? All those things. So I think Jerry's trying to convince himself that he has a franchise quarterback.
This is the thing that concerns me is who Jerry does his interview with. Marcellus been around the league, been covering the league, been doing shows for a long, long time. This is not no just ordinary radio show. You know, you do a little local radio show, you do a little favor for a friend locally, you know, you might sprout off, give them a couple little nuggets.
Right.
But when the big dogs come, the big publications, USA Today, because that's where this story is courtesy of, they have some of the best writers, been covering this game for a long, long time. You sharpen up on what you're going to say. That's why he brought out that big word, circumference, which Jenna said means also passing a catch radius. So, like, I understand, Jerry. I understand what you're trying to do even from a salesman standpoint because no one has done it better than Jerry as far as selling his team. Not unless he just tells me that I'm going to go with a quarterback who's going to accept less money over the course of the next 4 or 5 years. I'm going to pay my offensive line. I'm going to pay my running back, but I'm not going to pay my quarterback. If that's what he's going to do, I don't think Dallas fans are going to be happy. It's hard to be America's team for the next 20 years, and you ain't won no playoff game. So for me, I don't understand why you have to make this comment early in season number 3, because this offseason, they're going to really have to. If this comment is true, they're getting ready to give Dak a lot of money this offseason because he is in his rookie contract. He was not a first-round
pick. He doesn't have a fifth-round option.
He's only got a 4-year contract, right. And no franchise quarterback is going into the last year without an extension. So, Jerry, you're going to have to put your money where your mouth is if this is true.
Unless Jerry Jones thinks that the only difference between Dak Prescott in year one and Dak Prescott in year three is that he's got nobody to throw the balls to this year, and he's going to go out and shore up that receiving core and say, well, we're going to get the Dak Prescott back in year one. I just need to make him feel good and keep playing.
Well, Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones had that opportunity in the draft. Calvin Ridley was just sitting there and say, hello, yeah, I'm here, yes. And you want to go linebacker. And today's NFL, you don't go linebacker. You don't have the same impact. Guys that go out there throwing it 50, 60 times in a game. You need someone who can make it happen in the passing game, stretch it down the field, throw guys open. And Dak, beyond what you see in terms of numbers and lack of production from his receivers, he's mentally conservative at a position where everything is telling you, go get it, be risky. High risk, high reward right now in the NFL. And he's not doing that. And I don't know if you ever turn that switch on.
No, man, that's a great point there, especially when we see people. We saw Josh Rosen get battered last night. It's hard to play when you don't have protection.
Man, we see Baker Mayfield. Man, he's got that mentality you're talking about. Right. Man, I'm getting ready to go get this. I tell every guy in the league, man, this is your moment. You got to maximize it. I can guarantee you this. Dak will not play with a better running back than what he had. He will not play with a better collection of offensive linemen. The game will never be easier than what it is right now, and he's struggling with it when we have young guys. Crosstown here, Sam Darnold, doing well with the Jets with less offensive weapons than Dak has, less firepower than he has. So we are seeing guys be successful at a young age, and to me, that's an indictment on Dak and others who aren't succeeding, Nick.
Sometimes you're too close to a situation to see a clear picture of it. A couple days ago, when Coach Mangini was sitting in the seat you're in, I put him on the spot because he's been hammering Pat Mahomes seemingly all year. Mm-hmm. And I said, tell me a quarterback under 26 you'd rather have than Pat Mahomes. I'm going to ask the opposite question. Tell me a quarterback under 26 that's playing right now that you'd rather have Dak than him. Like, who's the guy, who's the young quarterback that we're like, we believe in Dak more?
How old is Nathan Peterman?
Okay, well, sure, that ain't right.
Hi, Jack.
Regardless of how bad I play football, God's going to love me. Yes, he is, son. But he prefers to have a better testimony on the field.
So, but, like, I mean, people watching, some people might have said, Josh Allen. Okay, sure, maybe. Yeah. We'll see. The Buffalo Bills feel differently, but he hasn't played enough yet. Some people might say Mitch Trubisky. Mm. We'll see. He's had a couple. You said he's never thrown for 4 touchdowns, right, Jack?
No.
So Mitch had a 6 touchdown game a couple weeks ago.
Already.
If we're looking at it, if you're not the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, is he the 12th best young quarterback in football? Mm. Forget the veteran quarterbacks? Like, that is the situation they're in, which is why the Cowboys, whatever Jerry's saying publicly, privately, you know what they should be thinking about? How good can we be if we spend a first-round pick on quarterback with this offensive line, with Zeke, with being able to take the plan Philadelphia and other teams have done?
Yeah, I think the nugget from this is what Marcellus said. Man, if you don't have a young quarterback that has that go-get spirit, like in this NFL where it is easier than ever, then you need to proceed with caution. Because if you can't throw the ball now, as easy as they have made it as far as the bump, you can't fall on guys. You can't hit a quarterback low. You definitely can't touch him high. Like, if you don't have that overall mentality, that's why Baker Mayfield, a year ago, he wasn't going to be the first pick in the draft.
Yeah.
But people saw that overall mentality. That's great insight right there. Young quarterback, man, mentality-wise. Haskins at Ohio State, he's got that mentality. Ohio State had 1 400-yard passing game in their history. Young fella, 2 out of the last 3 weeks, 2 400-yard game in their history.
In their history?
400, yes.
I didn't know
he's
that.
He's had 2 in the last 3 weeks. So, yeah, I like that. Yeah, be aggressive in your mindset to be able to build a match the overall passing game that's going on in the NFL.
All right, Marcellus, stick around. Got to take a break. Coming up, should Tom Brady already be having nightmares about Khalil Mack? That's next on First Things First. On Sunday, it is a great slate of NFL action highlighted by Cam Newton and the Panthers taking on Carson Wentz and the Eagles. Or you got Kirk Cousins and the Vikings battling the Jets. It is all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Check local listings for the game in your area.
Hey, Nick, what are we doing this weekend in Harlem, bro?
You coming over? Let's come on, see. We got a good early slate coming
through.
Only
if you invite Deontay, though. Well, he's the most woke staff member.
Man.
Woke.com. He over there walking around.
The problem is, if I invite Deontay, I'm inviting his whole entourage.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to bring a half dozen just stragglers with him into my house. People I ain't met.
You can come watch with me and the girls.
Okay.
Back here with the little girls, my kids. Marcellus Wiley, we are moving on.
Easy.
Patriots taking on the Bears on Sunday. Tom Brady versus the guy looking to make Tom Brady look bad, and that's Khalil Mack. One thing to note, Mack has missed the last 2 practices with an ankle injury, but he is expected to play this weekend. Marcellus, we'll start with you. How does this Patriots offense match up with the Bears defense?
Very intriguing matchup here because you could get caught up in this Patriots offense of late and say, oh, my God, unstoppable. If you look at them putting up 38, 38, 43, you're like, ooh. Mm-hmm. And then you start to look at who they played on defense, and it kind of makes you say, let me pause on that, right? But then
Indy, Kansas City.
Yeah, Miami and Indy, Kansas City. What's that, 23, 25, 32nd ranked defenses? So not so great there, but it's still Tom Brady. It's still him finding a running game and Sony Michel and James White. It's him having a Josh Gordon stretch the defense. And that does wonders for an offense because the imagination of a defense is we want to make sure we control tempo, we control dynamics. If we could bring our safety down, oh, we love life. Mm-hmm. We're going to compact this field to the point where we dictate terms. But now, even Josh Gordon just running by is going to make that safety say, oh, I got to stay back here a little bit. And that opens it up for Sony Michel and others. So I look at this matchup, the Bears defense, everyone's walking around talking about Khalil Mack, and he's been amazing. I mean, sack stripper like I've not seen in a long time at the position. But they're actually better against the run than they are against the pass. Like, your running back is the one who's going to have the sleepless night more so than the quarterback. But that said, I still think the Patriots, when they're scheming, the way that they're rolling right now, I think they have the edge.
I think the Bears are going to win this game. And I think Bears are going to win this game for a couple reasons. One is the two games the Bears have lost this year, it has been because their head coach, Matt Nagy, got conservative at the wrong times. Got a lead in week one against Aaron Rodgers. Well, Aaron Rodgers got knocked out, then came back. He didn't yet fully believe in his quarterback. They got conservative. They lost. Last week, inexplicably, because his quarterback was playing well, in overtime, they had pulled one out of the fire, forced a fumble at the goal line, got conservative at the very last second, played for a 53-yard field goal instead of trying to go score a touchdown and get an easier field goal, and they lost. Because of the Patriots and who they are offensively, you can't play conservative. You've got to go out there and try to score as many points as possible. And the thing the Bears have done better than any team in the league this year is force turnovers. And the Pats, uncharacteristically this year, are turning the ball over. Yeah. Brady has six interceptions and a lost fumble, the lost fumble in the Chiefs game. Yep. Like, and you're right, it's not just Khalil Mack. I'm going to bring up this name, Roquan Smith. Remember what the Patriots did to Travis Kelce. They had Dante Hightower just knock him off his route every play of the game, essentially. Mm-hmm. Roquan Smith might be doing that to Gronk. Not covering Gronk, but misdirecting Gronk. That is a big thumper at the University of Georgia, top 10 pick, not to mention Leonard Floyd. Like, the Pats offensive line has been good, but like you said, they also haven't faced a great pass rush the last month. I think this is a game in Soldier Field Chicago can win.
We talked all week about Khalil Mack, and we were talking about, Bill Belichick and his comparisons of Lawrence Taylor to Khalil Mack, and he said there are none. Lawrence Taylor is right up here. But I know you said there are other guys on this defense, but CC, Khalil Mack still at this point, even with a sprained ankle, has got to be posing some problems for you if you're looking at this Patriots offense.
Yeah, I think the sprained ankle for Khalil Mack is going to be a concern playing on that soft field there in Chicago. But I want to ask Marcellus as far as the LT comparisons, because Belichick was like, listen, don't mention the guy with my guy, LT. You played at a high level, made it to the Pro Bowl playing this league. Mm. I played against LT a bunch of times. Give us your intel and your research in the LT and for our fans out there who might not. There's a generation gap between what they've seen in Khalil Mack compared to who Lawrence Taylor really was as a football player.
Yeah, this is a difficult discussion because if you look at LT, was before his time in terms of changing the position, revolutionizing the position, and coming from angles at the outside linebacker position, at times playing defensive end, and it was a matchup nightmare. So that was the first time a tight end realized, I have to block him, and then the running back said, me too, and then the offensive tackle said, I need some help, and you just start to really stress them schematically. Now, Khalil Mack is in a time where you actually see that coming. He puts his hand in the dirt, says, hey, I will go against your best offensive lineman, and that means he's going against better defenders. So LT was able to exploit offenses in a way that we won't see another pass rusher do. That said, he had a tenacity. He had an energy that is not coachable. I can't put that in you. And even though Khalil Mack has a high intensity level and he's so strong and he's certainly quick and explosive, there was another level, and I will reserve that for LT or a Bruce Smith.
The guy that Khalil Mack should be compared to is not LT, but it's DT, Derek Thomas.
There you go.
I mean, the late, great Derek Thomas died tragically in a car accident during the prime of his career. Like, that is – Derek Thomas made the strip sack famous. Like, Lawrence Taylor made almost everything famous, but Derek Thomas, that was his signature play, coming around the edge and hacking down at the quarterback's arm, something –
Khalil Mack did in the first four games of this season, each and every game. Like, that's the player that I think is a more tangible, reachable, touchable goal for Khalil Mack.
Yeah, I think the words on LT are perfect. The comparison to Derek Thomas as far as body type, yeah. I would say they match up more so than LT. But let's give Chicago Bears and this organization credit. They went out. A lot of people talked about it. Rams talked about it potentially. Jets talked about it. They went out and made the trade and believed in Khalil Mack, gave him the contract. This is a franchise on the uptick. If they can get Nagy to figure out that quarterback position, they're going to be a dangerous team Sunday for New England, but they're going to be a dangerous team moving on into the future in the NFC North.
Marcellus, how much do you put on Matt Nagy? I know we touched on it, on trying to just get this offense not just more aggressive but also more creative, putting Trubisky in a better position.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, when you're trying to rear a quarterback in today's NFL, one, you want to compliment him. So first things first is, hey, you like that, pun intended?
Very much.
You got to allow him to be himself, see what he's comfortable at, and then dress that up. I think right now you see that.
But how do we know what he's comfortable at?
Well, we've seen some highs, some peaks that we haven't seen from other quarterbacks who are supposed to be franchise quarterbacks.
Right.
Reverse the block and look at our last coverage mm-hmm. of Dak Prescott and others. Here's the thing I love about Mitch. He can make all the throws. He's a big guy in the right place. Soldier Field, elements, adversity. You're going to deal with conditions. This is a guy that can withstand that. The thing about him that he needs now is to just feel comfortable. And it's weird. It's cliche. That light has to turn on. That game has to slow down. And it seems like it is at a rapid pace.
It'll be a quarter. He'll look like your guy. And then like 8 minutes or something, I could see. Yeah. He's frantic. He's back to moving
right.
around. Okay.
It's almost like you're living in your own head and you're creating your own opponents. You got to realize that there's only one team out there that you got to face, not this one up here. That hysteria that calms down over time.
But what Trubisky has going for him, and we don't talk about the Bears in this light as much because they have Khalil Mack and Roquan Smith and Akeem Hicks and Leonard Floyd. They have some nice weapons.
They do.
Jordan Howard is a good power running back. Tariq Cohen is the smallest guy in the NFL, but he is a lightning bug. Oh, yeah. Trey Burton has shown flashes to be a very good tight end. Obviously famous for the Super Bowl, but he's had some good moments this year. Taylor Gabriel is one of the faster wide receivers in football. We saw him have success in Atlanta. I think you look at some of the things the Chiefs did with Tyreek Hill and said, can Taylor Gabriel do this similar things?
Him and Cohen.
Him and Cohen, and as far as Cohen, Kareem Hunt out of the backfield.
Yes.
Kareem Hunt had a big touchdown catch, and Pat Mahomes missed him on another wheel route early in the game. And then Allen Robinson, who is their big free agent acquisition. Yep. Like, they have given Mitch Trubisky weapons. And this Patriot, as good as the Patriot offense been the last 3 weeks, we know their defense can get got, particularly by speed. If you make it not about, you know, a strength battle, but a speed battle, they can be had. And so, I the Bears are 3-point underdogs at home. I think on Monday we're going to be talking about the Bears getting back on track and New England taking a step back after their great win against Kansas City.
But with a young quarterback, it's really that balancing act, the jack of all or the king of one. And as a coach, you want him to be the king of something. Something that you can call, stay in this lane, and you own that. And that's what a young quarterback has to do. Then you start to expand that and have more coverage of what you can do in terms of the playbook.
Marcellus, thanks for hanging out with us.
Appreciate you guys.
The book is called Never Shut Up. Marcellus Wiley, go pick it up. It's a good read. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.